Hey, Dan.
Hello.
Hello.
You know, there's a lot going on. I had to finish my laundry before I called you because I have some basic levels of podcast decency. And while I try to have this be the podcast where anything can happen.
Anything can happen.
That was where I drew the line, was having being like, yeah, I'm my dryer is going. Just deal with it. I thought, let's wait for the call until my dryer finishes. So the towels are dry now.
I'm playing loud music in the background. Deal with it.
Yeah, that's whatever.
That's just what happens now.
I mean, my dog is in the room with me and she can make noise at any time. That's the kind of verisimilitude that the Six Colors Secret podcast I feel is famous for.
Oh, the listeners demand it.
Yeah, right. And the door to the house is open, so Lauren could come home at any time, and people will hear that, too. And that's fine. That's fine. But I thought it would be disrespectful to have my dryer going, and the washing machine is paused at the moment. So that's nice. For everybody out there. Some big stuff happened this week. That was funny. Some of the reaction to it. So I'm not going to do clockwise regularly anymore, and Mike is going to take over for me.
What?
Did you know? Sorry, Dan. Surprise.
Spoilers.
Because I'm doing the Download podcast, and it's, I don't need to take on another podcast, and it's similar enough that I kind of want to keep, I think it's good to keep some separation there, because if I'm looking for topics for one and looking for topics for another and guests for both and all that doesn't really, it's better to keep those separate. But then a bunch of people were like, oh, but I like the rapport that Jason and Dan have on Clockwise. And I think you actually responded before I could and said, well, you know, the Six Colors podcast is available.
It's pure rapport.
That's all
we do.
It's
100% rapport.
It's 100% banter. They're like, oh, I like your banter. It's like we banter for like 10 seconds in every episode because then we have to move on. This is all gold. If you're looking for banter every week-ish.
Ish. Pretty close to everything.
We're here for that. So yeah, big week.
It's a real shame we don't do any other podcast together.
It is. I started this week promptly on Monday at about 2 a.m. by getting violently ill. So
nice,
I've been
good choice.
I'm still not 100%. It's Friday. I'm still not 100%, but I'm coming back. I'm getting better every day. I managed to get through doing Upgrade on Tuesday and doing the Apple financial results on Tuesday. Fortunately, my low energy level on Tuesday was a perfect match for Apple's financial results.
also a little subdued.
Yeah. Yeah, I did use, I generated a little Q&A transcript, which has got some typos in it that somebody was trying to like, you doubled this word in this place. I'm like, yeah, you know, it's a transcript. It's fine. But I did, just for a behind the scenes thing, there's a new, machine transcript service called Trint, which, I don't love the name. We've run out of names now.
Transcript intelligence,
you might as well call
is that what they're going for?
Blip, brop, bloop. But here's the thing. So many of these things just tie to an API and like you feed a bunch of audio into it and it comes back with text that a machine has generated that is terrible. Or you wait a day and you get something that's from a person and it's less terrible, although still needs editing. These things always need editing by somebody who actually knows the subject matter and listens back to the audio, which is why I wrote a Six Colors piece about it. This is why there are not a lot of transcripts, because they're hard to do. And people talk differently than the way they write anyway, so they're kind of a hard read compared to a written article. But for the call, you know, it's good to have a transcript of like stuff Apple says, because those answers sometimes are very interesting. So I use this service, and what's different about it is that they haven't just welded it into a speech to text framework, but they built a text editor into it that's tied to the time code of the audio. And so as you click around, it plays the audio from those sections.
Oh,
you can
nice.
Control the playback speed. You can, you know, go back and pause it and things like that. And so that allows you to edit the transcript to make it actually accurate while you're listening. And that is really good. Like, I think this is going to be the way I handle, if I'm doing, these kinds of transcriptions in the future. I think this is the way that I'm going to approach it. Actually, Micah, my replacement on Clockwise, he did the transcript for iMore this time. And I was telling him, this is the way. In fact, I sent him my transcript and said, you just use this, stop transcribing now. Cause I saw he was still transcribing the Q&A iMore. Well, and I was like, just use this, because I had gone, basically I stayed about 5 minutes behind, and I would just keep splitting the audio hijack file every 10 minutes or so, and uploading that to Trint. And while I was still working on the previous ones, I just get to the next one and upload it. And then in like a minute, it's ready to go. And so I wasn't that far behind live, but I was working with the transcript already instead of typing everything out like you were doing for, you know, when you do a live blog, you know, you sort of have to type out vaguely what they say. And for a transcript, it needs to be exactly what they say.
Right. I have to edit when I'm doing a tweets, because you can't fit everything.
Exactly.
Right. And it doesn't make sense, because people have these little... you know, speaking not only ticks like saying whatever, but they also do narrative, or like, you know, spoken dead ends where they start down a sentence, realize that's not what I'm going to say, and that they're going to redo it. So you don't want to start typing like them going down this road of some sentence that then you realize, no, that's not how I want to phrase it.
Yeah, a lot of people, including myself, I know, speak in theoretical quotations too sometimes, where, you know, you will say something like, and now this is itself a theoretical quotation, you'll say something like, I was thinking about this, and I thought, you know, it never once, you know, you never want it to be that way, but, and it's like, wait a second, you just made a quote inside, you know, you're quoting yourself, or you're quoting a theoretical other person, and those are so weird to read to punctuate.
Right, because if you just read it like straight as it was without any punctuation, it would look nonsensical.
Right, so you have to put in commas or parentheticals or set it off with dashes. Anyway, so this Trint.com thing is pretty cool, and I will use it again, because rather than having what I used to do, which is type every word of it, it actually reminds me of when I would make transcripts later of when we were using a live blogging tool. What you did, you were often like doing the recounting, the blow by blow, and I was doing the analysis. But I was able to take your blow by blow and the audio file, and using your blow by blow commentary as the base, generate a complete transcript. And that was better because you had most of the words there, right?
Right.
And this is a little bit like that. It's a little messier because it hasn't been put through a human brain at all.
Right.
But it's it was pretty cool. So that was a good experience and that I was able to do in my weakened state.
Yeah. Transcripts are one of those things that I feel like people, I don't know. I don't want to say they're entirely unskilled, because as you've just pointed out, there is a skill to knowing how to do it, but like it is kind of menial, you know, labor, right? It's not labor that requires you to be super creative or whatever.
It's a little bit of both, right? I mean, there's an aspect of drudgery to it, which is typing,
right?
And then there's that other layer, which is how do I
encapsulate
right? Like, this? Well, yeah,
yeah. And so, I mean, it's one of those things, right, where it's like essentially at the end of the day, you're just writing down someone else's words, which can feel to a writer often very like, I am not doing any actual work here, because I'm just writing down what somebody else said. I'm a stenographer essentially,
I think,
at that point.
If you're a court reporter, then it's one thing, but I always felt like there was an art to it. So I did, I mean, so my first job at my college newspaper was typing in people's articles, because I'm so old that we didn't have a standard of electronic transfer of articles. And in fact, there were some people who turned in their articles on typewritten pages, which I will say I'm not so old that that was normal. We gave them the stink eye when they did that. We really wanted them to bring in a disc, but some of them didn't bring in a disc.
Right.
So, and I would type them and I would edit them as I go, which I wasn't supposed to do, but I would. And they made me an editor because I was already editing copy, which is like, again, bad typist, good editor, do that job. But for this, I feel like, you know, that's the art to it. When I'm editing that transcript, I'm trying to do it fast, right? Because time is of the essence. But at the same time, I'm also trying to make some judgments that are, I do think, is that extra layer, which is, okay, he went into the cul-de-sac and then started his sentence again. So that comes out. And this, I think, makes sense if I do a bracketed word here that he didn't say. And here, I think I need to set this off with commas or dashes, because it's really kind of an interstitial thought that, and then he goes back to the previous thought. And you're sort of like trying to make understandable written language out of spoken language. And there is an art to that is not being a court reporter, but it's weird. It's totally weird.
Yeah, it's weird. Yeah. I mean, and the live blogging thing I know is also weird. Live tweeting, I guess, is what we're going to do now.
Yeah.
We've been, you and I have been through so many different iterations of this kind of live coverage of events over the last decade that it's really, it has evolved in various ways. And I think, you know, the transcript or the, not transcript, the audio, you know, webcast or whatever has been generally available to people.
Yeah, anybody can listen.
Right. Like for as long as we've been doing this. Yeah. And not everyone does. I mean, it's not always that interesting. So, you know,
no.
A lot of the stuff can be gleaned from the press release. But there are a fair amount of people who pay attention to the when we tweet it.
People who there don't want to listen, right? You can listen. Yeah. So some people listen. And sometimes they don't want to listen. And they can read. And they get to see it there. Exactly.
Right. They can dip in and out. It is a service, I do think. I think it provides something that you can't get necessarily from the webcast. And it is also, because it's paraphrased and because we inject commentary at times and analysis, you know, at varying amounts depending on the what's in there. And for me, it's always, do I have time to write a little commentary thing here? Or am I too busy, you know, typing what's actually being said?
right.
You have to make that judgment call, too, in the same way that you have to figure out how to punctuate. It's like, because I'll leave stuff out that I feel like I just don't, you know, they'll go into talking about, like, surveys of purchase intent and stuff like that. It's like, I don't think most of our readers care about that. And if they do, they can wait for the transcript or they can look it up, right? That's marketing to me, you know, and I don't care so much about it's reiterating what Apple's executives are going to say to market why their products are so great. You know, we're more interested in the performance and the data, right? And that, not to say that doesn't have its own skew on it, because obviously they're presenting stuff in the best light possible. But the stuff that's really interesting is the stuff that is them. I mean, the part you transcribed was basically the Q&A, right? I mean, that's the part that's interesting because it's interactive and they have to respond to what someone is saying.
I mean, I find the reasonable people can differ, but I find the initial statements, we're so far down the weeds, but hey, this is the secret podcast. I find the initial statements that they're reading from a piece of paper generally not interesting. Because
there's sometimes one or two things, but it's usually just a rehash of the press release, which has been out for half an hour at that point. So
exactly.
You know, there's not much new to be gained there. Sometimes there are stuff that they don't break out, you know, and there might be a couple interesting details. But other than that, I was going to ask you, this is speaking of getting way down the weeds, this is related. Did you notice too, I've commented on this in the tweets, that the audio quality was really good.
Yeah,
they've moved to VoIP or something, because that is not a phone connection.
So I have a theory. It's just a theory.
Yeah, no, I want to see if it lines up with my theories. Go ahead.
So if you think about it, this has always been a broadcast of a phone call.
Conference call, yeah.
So I was thinking about it from the standpoint, this will be unsurprising to anybody, of a podcast.
Yeah, right, exactly.
If you think about it that way, how would I do this as a podcast? Because you've got a conference call line that all of the analysts have to dial into. And that's where your operator is, and that's where all the analysts dial in, and that's where you've got the control of who gets to talk and who gets to not talk. Okay. Well, that's on the phone, and that's going to be on the phone. There's no reason, if you're broadcasting this over Apple's website, there's no reason why everybody has to be on the phone call.
You go to the phone and then back out.
So think of it like a podcast where there's somebody who's on the phone. You have microphones in Cupertino for your executives.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got a bridge where that's being routed into the, you know, that audio is being routed into the phone call. So the phone call people can hear it. Out of the phone call, you take that audio, you mix that together with the microphone audio, and that's what you stream. And the thing that you stream doesn't have to be the thing that's the call. It needs to be, it's the raw materials from the call. So that seems to be what they did, is they just changed the source of where the audio for the live stream comes from.
We're getting much better. They clearly have a setup, as you're saying, with microphones in the room. And I think it's interesting because our colleague, Matt Dethridge, who at Mac, MDJ, MWDJ, who also tweets a lot about the results, was mentioning this time around, it was like, oh, I didn't see a press number, and I went looking for it. I couldn't find a press phone number, and it makes me believe they just killed that.
Yeah.
Because they just have the only call, the only phone number they now have is the phone number for analysts who are there to ask questions. And because the press thing, I think, was always a different number where you could, like, listen in, but you couldn't speak at all, right? Like, there was no...
Yeah, it was just a
there was no way
monitoring
to ask questions.
And why, I mean, everybody
why do that
in the press has the
webcast
internet, right?
Right, so, yeah. So, I mean, I think that makes a lot of sense. And, yeah, it was nice, though, because it was a lot easier to understand a lot of the things that they were saying.
Yeah.
Because the phone call quality is terrible. So,
I'd imagine
it's nice
it
that they have that done.
My transcript thing, my auto-transcript thing, too.
Oh, sure, yeah, because it's way clearer. I mean, so, it sounded like when you have, like, a FaceTime call, right, instead of a phone call. You know, it's just much better quality.
So, hey, everybody, guess what? We're talking a lot about making transcripts and the quality of the call because it wasn't very interesting. That's the... thing. That's the little subtext for you there. That's like on my favorite podcast, The Flophouse, when they spend a lot of time with lots of wacky digressions about things that are not related to the plot of the movie. It's because they cannot, you know, because there was nothing in the movie to talk about. And this was like this. Like, let's see, revenue was up slightly year over year. iPhone sales were down slightly year over year, but revenue was up slightly year over year.
It was almost flat.
It was essentially flat. It was essentially a flat to incredibly slow growth quarter for Apple. The Mac did well because they are, despite all of the people who complain about the MacBook Pros, they are selling well. They are selling well. People may be, and people may not be happy with them. Who knows? People may not like the price, but the price, the ASP is way up. The average selling price of Mac is way up, and Mac sales are up. Mac revenue is up. That's because of the MacBook Pro. So the MacBook Pro has done well for Apple. And the what else is going on with Apple? The iPhone thing. The thing that's interesting about the iPhone is, again, sales went down, but revenue went up. Why is that? It's because the 7 Plus is
right.
doing
Selling
better.
Very well.
Than they thought. I think that's the thing, is that there's still a little bit of sort of like the Plus is the weird outlier phone chauvinism happening at Apple internally. And I share it, but I don't think it's true. I think that what they're discovering is there's way more demand for the bigger, more expensive phone than they thought. And Apple is not one to look at a demand for a more expensive thing and ignore that, right? They're going to be like,
sure.
All right.
Yeah.
And I wonder, I mean, that's all the rumors about a new iPhone above a 7S that would be a new... you know, a whole new generation of iPhone. It all rolls into that, right? That would be a phone that has the resolution and basically almost the screen size of a Plus, but in something that's more sized like a traditional iPhone.
Right, because I don't think anybody buys it because they like the larger form factor necessarily, or for the most part. I think they like the larger screen, which yeah. necessitates the larger form factor.
And,
but
you
I
know,
think if
battery
you got
and,
the same,
and a camera. But
sure,
if you put
yeah,
all those
I,
premium
right,
products
features,
in that.
But
yeah.
it's not that people want a bigger object. Necessarily.
Not necessarily.
Some people do. Some people might, sure. But some people, I think, you know, the benefit is large the bigger people. Battery life and the bigger screen. And if you can fit a bigger screen into a smaller phone, you know, granted, as long as it's not like running down in like an hour, you know, that might be attractive to a lot of those people too.
Yeah.
I thought the other interesting point related to that, which you mentioned, I believe, in your Macworld column about this, was the pointing fingers at the iPhone rumors. In terms of why they feel like the sales have slowed down a little bit, because the iPhone rumors about the next iPhone start earlier. And, you know, it reminded me a little bit of people talking about like the elections, right? Like the elections now start, or the campaigns now start, like basically now, you know, and so the same thing with the iPhone rumors. It does seem like, you know, the week after a new iPhone model comes out, we're already thinking about the next one. And there have been a lot of rumors, and we do see them leaking earlier. And, you know, it's unclear sometimes how much of these are legitimate and how much of them are, you know, even the ones that are legitimate, are some of them like prototype things? Are some of them real? It's hard to tell. And so, you know, I can understand. I wonder if we're seeing a similar situation with pent-up demand that we saw. Famously, the iPhone 6 and iPhone 6 Plus year was so big in sales because people really wanted a larger iPhone. And similarly, now that we've had the same form factor for roughly 3 years, or three models anyways, you know, the question is there a lot more pent-up demand again now because people are waiting for something, you know, another big change or big jump in the iPhone? And that could be suppressing people, like, running out and buying phones right now.
I guess we'll see. See, look, we made a lot of conversation about these relatively boring results. The iPad had its lowest sales number in 6 years. So,
yep, that's a wow. What a weird product in some way. I saw someone tweeting online afterwards about, like, or maybe it was in one of our Slack rooms or something, saying like, oh yeah, I still know people, you know, plugging away on their iPad 2. And it's like, yeah, those things do last pretty long.
My gut feeling is that this new iPad 5th generation or whatever it is will drive some sales because it's 320, you know, because it's cheaper and it's modern. And for people who've got old ones, it will be a big upgrade. And I think in the end, that will probably help turn the tide on iPad sales. But like,
do you think it'll turn the tide or just sort of like stabilize it?
Well,
like, I don't know.
I mean, that would be turning the tide. Like,
yeah,
if they start going up
fair
slightly
point.
Instead of down. But what I was going to say is, but the level, what we keep redistributing the iPad's like expected final level, like, oh, I'm sure it'll settle in at, and that number just keeps going down of where it
yeah,
will settle
right,
in at.
Right. So I wonder at the end of the day, I'm very curious to see how it fares, not compared to the iPhone, which I think we all agree is sort of an outlier as products go, but to the Mac.
Yeah.
You know, the Mac, as we've said before, the Mac actually did fairly well this quarter, as it seems to be doing in general, and it never shows huge blockbuster growth, but it's pretty consistent in terms of where it falls. And so, you know, it's doing, for a product that is in its fourth decade, it's doing remarkably well. And as you said about the laptops earlier, like, despite people being somewhat dissatisfied, they still seem to sell very well.
Yeah.
I'm interested to see how the iPad, which of course has in the past been viewed as sort of a, if not a Mac replacement, at least, you know, something that people can use to do a lot of what they want to do on a computer, and see if that settles in at a level that's still above the Mac or close to the Mac. I don't think, I would guess it doesn't go below the Mac, if only because the price of
right.
iPads,
well, I
know,
mean,
unit wise.
Yeah, exactly right. I mean, it's actually generating way more sales than the Mac, but the
sure,
revenue,
it's almost twice as much, I think, right now in terms
yeah.
of.
Right. Well, yeah, and that's because the ASP is almost half as much.
Exactly. So, you know, but will it drop further to the point where it's like, you know, half again as much rather than twice as
yeah.
much? I don't know.
That's
possible.
It's a question. Another story this week that is interesting is Microsoft's Surface laptop, which is basically a MacBook Air. It looks very much like the MacBook Air. It's 2.8 pounds, I want to say. It's got the latest i5 and i7 processors from Intel, like the MacBook Air does not. I mean, it has i5, i7s, but it hasn't been updated. The difference is being it's got a Retina caliber screen. And of course, it's a touch screen because it's Microsoft, but it's a Retina screen. And it starts at $999. And of course, Apple's $999 laptop is previous generation Intel processors and no Retina and no touch because no Mac has touch. And I think what's really interesting about this product is that Microsoft, because the Retina MacBook is, what, $1,299?
Yep.
So Microsoft, very clever, is you know, it's that good, better, best thing. Like, you, what you do is you create an underspec product and sell it at a low price so you can claim that your product line starts at $999 mm-hmm. when in fact nobody really wants the $999 product. And this is where I'm right. going with this is, if you look at the specs of the MacBook, I mean, leaving aside that the MacBook's got that Core M, whatever it is, processor that is less powerful but much cooler. But leaving that aside, and it is true, it is not an i5 or an i7, but it's in the ballpark, but it's not. If you look at specs, what you discover is, in terms of memory and storage, that $999 Surface laptop is a teaser laptop at $999 yep. because with equivalent specs in terms of SSD and RAM, it's the Surface laptop is the same price as the MacBook.
Right.
So, yeah. If you look at the MacBook Escape, you look at that, like, it's in the ballpark as the MacBook Escape. MacBook Escape, which is that's a Marco Arment term, but I really like it because there are two 13-inch MacBook Pros because they gave, mm-hmm. they have the touch bar and the not touch bar, which is kind of weird but the not touch bar MacBook Pro 13-inch, which is kind of the MacBook Air replacement, that's not the MacBook, kind of. Right? It's using those processors. It's only about 0.2 pounds heavier than the MacBook Air or the Surface. Again, in the ballpark, when you have the specs be comparable. So I think this is one of those cases where it's interesting that Microsoft has chosen to do this. You could argue that Apple would probably not sell a MacBook with the specs that the $999 Surface laptop has. Mm. But that's the thing, right? Is this if Apple wanted to get the MacBook Air off of the product list and have the MacBook sales reach down there, they could do what Microsoft is doing, which is sell a MacBook for $999 that's under spec'd, like the Surface laptop at $999 is, which is what, 4 gigs of RAM and it's a small SSD. They could do that because Microsoft isn't actually beating. If you look at the specs, Microsoft's not actually beating Apple. It's just going down lower than Apple has been willing to go with the MacBook.
Well, with the exception of the processor, which I think it's close, but not.
It's true. And what Apple's decided to do is make one that's thinner and lighter, way lighter, right? Because the MacBook is way lighter than the Surface laptop. Way lighter.
Well, and that's why, I mean, I kind of wrote my Macworld column about this week and talking about, you know, in something that we also talked about on Clockwise a little bit, which is this idea of faster horses and, you know, as opposed to trying to reinvent and push the envelope. And there's nothing radical, really, about the Surface laptop, right?
Like you said, this is
not a radical product. This is a very conservative product.
I mean, Microsoft's literally just trying to build a MacBook Air. Feel like the Windows could really use a good MacBook Air, and none of its partners are willing or interested or like up to Microsoft standards at that price. So Microsoft's going to do it. It is not new in any way. It is a MacBook Air.
Yeah, and I mean they're leaving the low end of the market, the $500 laptops to all of their partners. That's fine.
Carolina Milanese on Download this week had a really good point though, which is the partners are mad because the partners want the premium segment too. They don't want Microsoft stealing all the taking all the oxygen out of the air at the premium segment and leaving them the scraps, right? But that's happening.
Well, and I was surprised too when they announced this because obviously people are talking about they made a laptop and it's like, but they made the Surface Book a year or two ago.
Yeah.
Right.
It's a 2-in-1. It's a convertible. It's not quite the same.
But I mean, it is a laptop essentially. End of the day, it's got a keyboard. It's got a, screen. Like I have a friend who has one and, it's perfectly serviceable as a laptop. This is a lower, version of that, not a convertible, etc. But still, I don't know. It's Microsoft building out its laptop line a little bit more. It's interesting to see them getting more and more into the business of being a hardware maker.
It is. And inspired by Apple to do about what you can do if you control the software and the hardware.
Yep. Yeah. So I think it's interesting to watch the evolution of Microsoft over this past decade or so. Because as things like, Windows used to be obviously the biggest game in town, almost the only game in town. And as more and more stuff has shifted to the web, the operating system has become less important, right? Like the big issue in the 90s when we were all Mac users was there were tons of software on Windows that you couldn't get on the Mac. And these days, the software has shifted either to mobile or to web-based.
Yeah.
And so the desktop/laptop platform is not as important as it once was. And as I assume, because Microsoft has done kind of a terrible job in the mobile space in terms of their own platform, finding a way to work with. And this is why we've seen Office and other Microsoft software products work so well on the Mac, because they've realized that's kind of where we stand to hold on to our ground, is by making software that works on all these platforms. And so now they're backpedaling into the hardware, from building their own hardware and controlling their entire platform, which is a very Apple way to do it. And it's interesting to watch that change as the years go by. I'm kind of curious. The big question for them is whether or not I feel like at this point they probably won't take another shot at mobile anytime soon, because they really,
no,
it's really not gone well for them. But it is a huge market that they don't really have access to from a hardware perspective.
I think Ty just being really great at being, being your pal that's not a phone is maybe what they are left with at this point for now.
Yep.
I mean, I just think that's the card that they have been dealt now, that their failure on mobile is something they got to live down and take advantage of it. Like, I think you could argue that Apple is now a little bit of a prisoner of its dual OS strategy, where, which again, there are worse things to be than the maker of the iPhone. Literally, I looked it up. Microsoft's total revenue last quarter was about twice what Apple's profit was last quarter. Apple made like 50 some billion dollars in revenue, and Microsoft's revenue was like 20 something. Yep. It's not like, it's not even close. And so it's not a bad problem to have, but the fact is Apple has gotten in this weird situation where Apple's got this iOS advantage, but they've kept the Mac and iOS apart, and it's like, no, touch is over here. This is the future. This is kind of a legacy operating system. We're going to kind of like keep them at arm's length. And Microsoft's like, geez, we don't have a mobile strategy, so we're just going to keep updating Windows to be more touch and be more tablet-like and do all of this stuff. And you know what? There is a path where Microsoft is right. Like, yep. One of the possible endings here is that Microsoft ends up having an advantage of only having Windows to focus on, where Apple gets distracted, where what they really need to be doing is either making the Mac turn into iOS or give up on the Mac entirely and just embrace iOS. But since they're not willing to do either, they end up in this weird in-between spot where, you know, it turns out the right answer is traditional desktop PCs that transform into modern touchscreen operating systems, and Apple doesn't want to play that game, that Microsoft will have the advantage. Certainly, it's Microsoft's only play, right? So, of course, Microsoft is going to go there.
They're going to bank heavily on that. Yeah, well, I mean, and I think you're totally right. But they could be right. Yeah, exactly. That they're both playing the odds here, and, you know, it's not that Apple's going to fail in any way, like in the sense that like that's going to destroy them necessarily, but it could be a very successful play for Microsoft, and it does relieve the pressure of, you essentially, you know, Apple's fighting a war on two fronts, right? Like, they're trying to maintain their desktop and they're trying to maintain their mobile. And you see this when, you know, people start complaining that the Mac doesn't get any attention anymore, and that the Mac, you know, Apple did a, you know,
I mean,
the whole issue with the Mac Pro, the whole issue with people talking about the Mac Pro, MacBook, the Touch Bar, all this stuff where it's like, these are fine products, but like, there's rumblings, there's people dissatisfied, right? And that means that Apple has to devote more attention to that, which is a much smaller portion of their overall revenue and their overall product mix. And so, you know, they might be happy sort of sustaining that and keeping it at a certain level and thinking like, okay, we're gonna put this in like standby mode, and we're gonna keep churning out products, but we're not gonna like super push the envelope, and then people get angry. I know, it makes so many more people they're beholden to in that way.
To be clear, if Apple decided, like Microsoft, to just start transforming, and even if they had done it a couple of years ago, to start transforming the Mac to be more and more iOS-like, which
I believe... People will still be pissed off.
I believe that's exactly right. I believe that was actually the Scott Forstall approach, and that after they fired Forstall, that this people thought, okay, well, the Mac, we're not going to try to do that. We're going to let the Mac be the Mac, but we're not going to put a lot of effort into it. And then that seems to have had a turnaround now with that mea culpa meeting at Apple about the Mac Pro and all of that, that it seems like people have realized, look, you can't take the Mac for granted. You still need to push it ahead, and you need to do it under different circumstances than how you treat an iOS product, right? But if they did go down that road, everybody would be furious too, and everybody would be threatening to or defecting to Windows over that, right? I mean, in the end, this is a period of transition, and there's going to be upset, and Apple, you know, so what it comes down to is Apple's view of where the Mac is going and how it wants to get there. And right now, Apple is like not interested in adding like touch to a computer. And they might be right in that. I know some people like touch on a laptop. I have observed my daughter on her Chromebook, which has a touch screen. And I will tell you, she likes that it's a touchscreen, but very rarely touches on it. It is a tertiary input device, right?
Sure.
It's like keyboard, trackpad, and then maybe you swipe or tap on something on the screen. But it is a last resort. So I'm not entirely convinced, unless you're an artist, unless you're in a very particular kind of context, that it's a huge deal. But, you know, the question is, does Apple keep pushing the Mac down that route, or does it and I think that they still believe this, do they keep the Mac relevant as long as they can so that they can keep building up iOS, which to be the thing that people can use as a full-fledged replacement? The challenge is that, you know, it's been, you know, iOS 10 completely skipped any of those features in terms of like adding more Mac-like pro features. And I know they're working on them, and there's lots of rumors that iOS 11 is going to have them. And that's great. But like in the meantime, they're in this in-between situation where they're like trying to push the Mac forward, but they really want to work on their next generation operating system so that it's at the point where you could legitimately say, we're going to start making iOS laptops and iOS desktops, and they're just as good, and the Mac's going to fade away, or they're just as good and we're going to start creating transitional products that will still run Mac software, but really you're going to be inside of iOS and you're going to get used to it and this is the future. But they're nowhere near that right now, and that's an opportunity for Microsoft. I just to back up about the hardware for a minute though, I think it is interesting that Apple did create this third product category in the laptop line with that MacBook Escape, the touch barless MacBook Pro, because they kind of got stuck in between, again, the desire to do a thinner, lighter laptop, which is the MacBook, and the power of that MacBook Air class processor.
Right.
And so now you've got, you know, sometimes I wonder if they had called it something different and not MacBook Pro, and it had been considered a separate product and maybe even released at a slightly different time, if people might keep their eyes on it a little more, because I do think it's kind of the secret of the Mac product line. People who listen to ATP know that Marco has one of these now and really loves it. But, you know, the idea is it's more expensive than the MacBook Air. There's no doubt about it. They priced it at a $500 premium, but it's got the kind of like modern version of the Air class processors, and it's got battery life, and it's got no touch bar, and it's got a Retina screen, and it's not a bad computer.
And if it came in 11 inch size or smaller, well, I would be all over it. I just find the 13 inch too big for me.
In reality, it's the 13 inch MacBook, and the MacBook is the 12 inch MacBook.
Yeah.
Right. So it's the follow on to the 13 inch Air. And this is the follow on. The problem is it's the follow on to the 13 inch Air, but costs $500 more. So I don't know. I feel like it is in Apple's best interest. No, it's in Apple's best interest to make as much money as they can from the Mac. And they're doing that. It's in the platform's best interest for Apple to quickly find a suitable modern replacement for that $999 Air that they're still selling, right? And that's going to require either for them to be more aggressive with the MacBook or the MacBook Escape or both in the next round.
Well, that's the hole. That is the big question to me. And in this article I wrote today at Macworld was what does the second act of the current MacBook look like? Because we've seen the first act, and it's been out there now for 2 years, roughly. And there's, you know, in the same way, and we've talked about this before, it mirrors the development of the original MacBook Air. It's very thin. It's very, you know, impressive piece of hardware, but there's a bunch of trade-offs. There's only one port, right? Like the original MacBook only had a USB and a display port and a headphone jack. It's somewhat underpowered compared to the rest of the lineup. It's kind of expensive compared to like what you get for it. And Apple iterated and developed a second model of the MacBook Air, which solved a lot of those problems. And
eventually, that's the good one.
It turned it into the most popular lineup, like the most popular laptop in the lineup. So there's no question to me that should be what they're aiming for, is like when the technology is ready for them to do that, to turn that MacBook into the sort of base level computer for everyone, and the pattern is there. But, you know, now we're all kind of waiting to see, because either Apple can choose to do that, or they can choose to double down on what they think they're, you know, what they're arguing with the first version of the MacBook, which is you don't need a lot of ports anymore. You don't need this, right? And that's the real concern, is that they're going to focus on the things that are perceived as the downside, but they might conceive as the things that like define what this product is. And we don't know yet, because we haven't seen a second data point for them to say, yeah, that was all like we were doing what we could with what we had, and now the technology has gotten better, and so we can do this. We can add a second port, right? Like, there's a lot of things in there that could convince me to become a MacBook customer if Me those too. Changes were made. But I don't know. I haven't been convinced yet that that's what they're going to do.
I think it's a very interesting subject. By looking at just the product naming strategy, I have to say it looks like what they're really saying is if you need an i5 or i7 instead of an M5, you're a pro. That what they're saying is like regular people who are not pros they can just have a MacBook. Like the MacBook is fine. It's powerful enough at that, and it's thin and light and has no fan, and isn't that great? And that's a decision. I mean, and then the pro moniker alone, right? Now you're up a couple $100s.
Right, but your MacBook, even though the problem there is, like you said, they're still not playing in that $999 market for the MacBook, right?
Yeah,
the MacBook is still a premium.
And that's why the Air is still sitting there. So I think so. I mean, I don't think the MacBook second, I guess third generation, but the second like rebuild of it instead of just a speed bump, I don't think it needs to be $999, but I think it needs to be less than what it is now. And if they underspec it to get it to $999, and people howled about the fact that there wasn't enough RAM or it wasn't enough SSD, I think it still might be worth doing it. Like Apple doesn't want to make a product that's unusable, but like SSD is a good example. Like you can make a product with very. I use the first MacBook Air. You can make a product with very little SSD, and it's still fine, especially since you've got cloud stuff. It's not. And in fact, I would argue with Sierra, with all of that auto space management stuff, you really could make a light SSD and ship it in a Mac and save some money and put that down and then upsell everybody with options. And the fact is, your average selling price on a MacBook is not going to be $999 or anything like it, because so many people are going to opt for more RAM or more storage.
Yep, that's totally fine. Or, you just need to get them in the door.
And Microsoft, it's one color in $999. If you want the colors, you got to pay extra. All of that stuff, you got to pay extra. So, Apple could totally do something like what Microsoft's doing with the Surface laptop. And it would not surprise me if we see that, along with, a couple of ports, including support for Thunderbolt 3, maybe.
Just give me one more port.
Yeah, one more port.
Already doubled my interest in that computer.
I agree. All right. Well, we should break for the week. But thanks to everybody out there for subscribing to Six Colors. We really appreciate it. You keep the lights on. And Dan. When are we going to talk about your book? Next time, maybe?
One of the next times. We're getting close to a release date, so we'll sit down and have a conversation at some point.
Nice. All right. Bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.